They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Shu Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Shu Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, and joining us today, we have Don DeVat. Don is a media consultant, communication consultant, a Pulitzer Prize nominee. He's a columnist and he's been a journalist, and he's joining us today. Thank you so much, Don.
Well, thank you, Shu.
Don, we've got a lot to talk about today, and I know that you've got a lot to tell us, so I'm looking forward to doing that. But before we do that, I understand that you are known as the bungalow man and not a high-rise man, and that your nickname is Batman. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, let's see. Well, with a name like Don DeBat, and it's D-E capital B-A-T, it's my dad is French, and he came to Chicago from New Orleans, so I'm part French. The other half of my ethnic origin is my mother's side, which is, I guess, she always said she was a Bohemian, but she was, her family, I guess, came from what is now the Czech Republic, okay? So, in Chicago, there's a sport that we play called 16-inch slow pitch softball, and I'm a softball player. And this is this game where you play with no gloves. It looks like baseball. It's played like baseball, except there's 10 players on the field instead of 9, and you play without gloves. And the ball is larger than a 12-inch softball, which is what they play most throughout the U.S. Anyway, so the Batman nickname came about when I was a reporter for the Chicago Daily News, and one day I put a note on the bulletin board starting a softball team, 16-inch Chicago-style slow-pitch softball. And I had worked at the paper a couple of years, and I was a business reporter, and after I put the note up, the famed columnist, Mike Royko, comes over to me and he puts his hand on my shoulder, and I had never talked to him. I'd worked there a couple of years, and he was an icon. I mean, you know, a Pulitzer Prize winner and one of the great newspaper columnists in America, kind of the Jimmy Breslin of Chicago, if you want to call it that, back in that day. So, and this was in the 60s, the late 60s, early 70s. I think it was actually 1970 when we started the team. And Royko said, lad, I understand you're starting a softball team. And I said, yes, sir, Mr. Royko. And he said, here's how we'll do it. I'll be the manager, meaning he was going to be the manager, and I was going to be the captain. Okay. So I said, being a young reporter, I was pretty naive, and I just said, well, what are the duties of the captain? I didn't even say, hey, wait a second, it's my team. Anyway, and he said, well, you get to design the T-shirts. Oh, a Chicago-style softball team. This was for the Chicago Daily News. So the Daily News across the front, and on the back, he had already arranged to have a sponsor, Billy Goat Tavern, the famed Billy Goat Tavern, double cheese, you know, cheeseburger, you know, from John Belushi. No, Pepsi, no chips. No fries. They handed out potato chips with their burgers. Anyway, so that was our sponsor. And then he said, I have to make all the phone calls. Okay, so in those days, nobody had a cell phone, and so he had to round up the team. And then he said, said, oh, yeah, you do have this job of, there's, in those days, we had a duffel bag, and we threw all the bats and the balls and stuff in that. I had to carry the bat bag, so I became Batman.
Oh, so that's where that came from.
I became a pretty good softball hitter, so there was a double meaning there, you know. But on the first day when we started, I was the guy carrying the bat bag. This team went on to be inducted in the Softball Hall of Fame in Chicago, and we had a great team and won many championships. And I'm still, then the team was transplanted to the Chicago Sun-Times when the Daily News folded in 78, and I ran the team. I was the manager when Royko left the Sun-Times and went to the Tribune, Chicago Tribune. When Rupert Murdoch bought the Chicago Sun-Times, Royko said that he would not work for the paper because after Rupert got a hold of it, the paper wouldn't be worth wrapping a dead fish in. So, anyway, Royko was a character. And he was the guiding force behind the team, and we had a lot of fun. Anyway.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'd heard that that was your nickname, and I had to find out why. I thought maybe because of your name, DeBat. But you are also a Pulitzer Prize nominee for a three-part series you did on shoddy home repairs.
I did a couple of different when I was a business writer and then later a real estate editor of the Daily News and then also real estate editor at the Sun Times later. We did during that recession in the early 80s when the interest rates went up to 18%, nobody was buying homes. So my real estate section kind of shrank. And the editor of the Sun Times in those days was a guy by the name of Jim Hoag. He's still a very, very respected magazine editor on the East Coast now. And he suggested that I do a series on remodeling contractors. And so we had two houses. One of them was mine, and another was in the suburbs. And we, solicited bids for work to be done. And the remodeling contracting industry was it's a shady business in many ways. I'm sure there are many reputable contractors out there across the nation, but we had some really bad ones in Chicago, and we did this expose on remodeling contractors, and it was a seven-part series, page one of the Sun-Times for a week, and I got death threats after it ran, and the newspaper nominated the series for Pulitzer Prize in the community service area. I didn't win one, but it was a thrill being nominated. And over the years, I've won many, many awards for articles in real estate and in business and things like that. We had the paper, the section that I ran was called Home Life. And the Home Life won the Best Real Estate Section in the Nation Award four times. Once at the Chicago Daily News in 1977, when the paper folded in 78. And I transplanted, because we won that award, I think that's one of the reasons why I got a job at the Sun-Times, because the two papers were both in the same building, which is now the site of Trump Tower, by the way, in Chicago on the river. You know, the old Sun-Times building was torn down, and Donald Trump built his fancy hotel and condo high-rise on the site. And
is that the one where they changed the city ordinances to reduce the size of the signs that were allowed on buildings?
Yes, exactly, because as you know...
Okay, I saw that. That's a huge Trump sign in the middle of that.
Yeah, Donald has a rather large impression of himself, and his sign was huge. It just says Trump, just the word Trump. And now the city passed an ordinance saying you couldn't have a sign that big to label or brand a building, you know. So no one will ever have a sign bigger than Donald Trump.
Well, I don't see why you can't have a big sign. Let people read it. I mean, as we get older, our eyesight gets a little bit weaker. So You know, you need to be able to look across the city and see where you're going, right?
Well, that's a point. You know, you do have a point there. You know, it's become a kind of a tourist attraction. You know, there's Trump Tower. He's running for president. So now it's even, you know, it's even a bigger issue, you know, in terms of like, you know, guidebook clutching tourists with cameras snapping pictures of it and things like that. And they have this river tour that you take on the river cruising Wendella or one of those boats, and they go right by it and everybody takes pictures of it, you know. So
it's a beautiful building. I mean, I haven't been to Chicago, but it's a beautiful building.
It is a beautiful building, and I think that you know, it's an icon on the skyline, without a doubt. Chicago's a great city when it comes to architecture. And it's changed so much over the past 30 or 40 years. It's amazing. I mean, you know, when I was, like I said, a young reporter, you know, there were a lot of high rises on Lakeshore Drive, but they were built in the late 50s, early 60s, and they were really kind of, you know, ordinary, mediocre buildings. And then they built Lake Point Tower, which is this curvy building by a high-rise, now a condo. It was originally a rental building, and it was converted during the condo conversion boom, which I guess we're going to talk about too. And it's Lake Point Tower is a beautiful building. If you could picture a clover leaf, three petals on a clover leaf, you know, that's the way the building looked if you looked at it, you know. And then it's right across the street from Navy Pier, and that Ferris wheel and all that stuff that's going on down there. Back in the day, you know, Chicago was a rough and tumble city, and there were all these tremendous architectural icons when I started in the business. I mean, that whole area behind, you know, off of Michigan Avenue East, behind Tribune Tower, was just warehouses. And you know, the Sun-Times building looked like a warehouse. It was only seven stories high, and Marshall Field, who owned the paper, Marshall Field V, I think, he ran out of money or something, or there was a recession in 1958, and the building was supposed to be 14 stories, and it only got up to seven, and they said, oh, well, that's over. We're not going any higher.
So it's
and, of course, yeah, they replaced it with Trump Tower, which must be 90 stories, you know. So
wow.
Anyway.
Wow. But, no, well, I live in a place where everything's made of cardboard and scotch tape, and it all looks alike. It's horrible. So whenever I see a beautiful skyline, or whenever I see some really nice, innovative, creative, different buildings, I like it. It just does something to me. So when I was doing some research on stuff and I found that picture, I thought, all right, I like that building.
So, it is very beautiful.
You are handling the media for Chippy, which is, and I will never, as long as I live, remember this, even though I'm on the board, but the Coalition for Community Housing Policy in the Public Interest, and it's Chippy for short.
Really a mouthful, yes.
It is a mouthful. It really is a mouthful. So, tell me, you've written some press releases for Chippy and for the survey that they did?
I did. First of all, the organization, the Chippy organization, really came out of, you know, the book that Sarah Benson and I wrote called Escaping Condo Jail. And we, you know, over a four-year period, researching the book, and Sarah was, you know, tremendous at connecting up with groups across the country, and I suppose that's how, you know, she connected with you too. Just people were, you have to understand that there's 70 million people in America that live in an HOA or a condo association, and condominiums and HOAs are supposed to be, you know, carefree living. Chances are you would never have to worry about cutting your grass or mowing, mowing your grass or shoveling snow or doing anything. That's what people like about them. And there's a security issue. Women love condos and HOAs because of the security issues. But there's also a lot of problems with, living in one of these communities, in the with the association shared communities, that apparently a lot of people are unhappy. The survey, Chibi was started because of people complaining about problems. The survey reached out to owners and across the country and got feedback on what it really was like living in a homeowner association community or a condo association. And I wrote a couple of columns off the report, and actual newspaper columns, and then the columns became we had such positive feedback in Chicago, we decided to send out a national report, a two-part report, and I guess you can call it a news release. I mean, because I'm involved as a board member too with Chippy.
Yes.
So we took the columns and turned them into news releases, and we just those were sent out for the first time this week. The columns ran in Chicago, and also I think it was picked up by through an RSS feed through in Florida by the National Association of Realtors Florida organization published some information on the survey. So the thrust on this whole thing, in the book we comment on there was a study done by an outfit by the name of Association Reserves, the California company that helps association budget and operational issues. Back in 2013, Association Reserve reported that 72% of these HOAs and condo associations across the country were underfunded, and which was a huge, shocking number for us, I mean, to think about it. And so, in our new survey, the Chippy survey found that 95% of the community associations that we surveyed said that the residents feel that there's a lack of transparency and poor communication. And, this is huge. These are huge, negative numbers in terms of like people not being happy. When you think the perceived, when a developer develops a community, they're promising you happiness and carefreeness and, everything's going to be, it's going to be Disneyland, a lot of times it isn't. And,
even in the city that Disney built, Celebration, Florida, trust me, it's not Disneyland. They have their problems.
Right.
Huge problems.
The survey rated 26 different issues. It's a broad spectrum from everything from, voting and election procedures to power of the board to fine owners. An overwhelming percentage, 93% of the people who responded to the survey, so there's at least a moderate problem with power of the board, issuing fines and things like that. And I think we had more than 300 owners residing in condo and HOA communities in Florida, California, Nevada, Illinois, Texas, and Arizona responded to, and several other states responded to this survey. Now, it's not a huge sample, but wherever we go, it seems like the results are the same. People, there's a lot of unhappiness out there, and it's an issue. It really is an issue. Some of the comments that came back, like I said, we did this report in two phases. One of them reporting the results of the 26 areas that we studied. And then the comments, people said, okay, here's the problem. And then they were allowed to send back by email their specific, suggestions. And that I found to be extremely compelling, you know, in what they said, their quotes, and one of the most, I would say, compelling. I like compelling because this is a direct quote from an owner in a California HOA. He said, "The president ran the HOA like Captain Bly."
Yeah.
Now, everyone knows Captain Bly was the captain of Mutiny on the Bounty, and you picture British seaman Fletcher Christian serving under the lash of the evil Captain Bly, you know, on a voyage to Tahiti. The owner said the president imposed fines, doubled them, and then took me to court. He ran out my tenant prior to Christmas because he didn't like him. Apparently, this unit was rented. It took 4 months to find a new renter, and my house is near foreclosure. You know, so that was the comment about one president discriminated against.
So, Don, owner. Tell me, how does that square with the notion that HOAs protect property values? In this case, we have a very clear picture of it doing the exact opposite.
Well, I think that's a myth in a lot of ways. You really don't know what you're getting into until you buy and you actually take ownership and you're living in the community. I certainly would advise anyone who's planning on buying a condominium or a townhouse or whatever in an HOA to do some serious detective work before they purchase and close. A lot of times people buy because that perceived idea that this is going to be carefree living, and they might also buy because it's convenient to their jobs, it's an easy commute. I don't think a lot of people buyers really do the research and, knock on a couple of doors and say, hey, how do you like living here? And you might find some interesting facts about what's going on in the community. You would say, well, why doesn't my realtor, give me the lowdown on what's going on in this community? Remember, there's a lot of realtors out there are really wonderful people, and they do an excellent job. They're very knowledgeable. But the bottom line is they're trying to sell a unit and collect a commission, and they're not going to get into the negatives. Oh, you like the community? Great. Well, here, I've got a couple of beautiful listings over there. And then you look at the real estate. It looks nice. The landscaping looks nice. You buy without asking too many questions about how the actual governing of the community is done, then you find out later that the condo board or the HOA board is run by some despots who, I don't know. I mean, that's amazing why some of these people volunteer to do this. I think their lives must not be fulfilled.
Power hungry. Well, I mean, there are a lot of things that go on there, Don. The attorneys will tell them that this is what they have to do, because if they won't do it, then somebody might find or sue them for not enforcing the governing documents, which is a crock. They might, but there's nothing in any governing document that says you have to enforce everything. It says you may enforce it, and so can any member. So instead of using everybody's money, if it's something that bothers you, then go ahead and take it to court. And if you lose, you lose, and you pay up. But don't use everybody else's money to do that. But the other question I'm going to ask you is, from everything I've seen in pictures of Chicago, there are a lot of high rises there. So are there non-HOA housing, pockets of housing throughout the city that's available for people to buy? Or if you're going to be a homeowner in Chicago, like over here in Fairfax County, you have no option. You have to buy in an HOA because that's all there is.
Well, yeah, I think, if you're going to buy a condominium in Chicago, you have a choice of buying a resale unit, which is in an existing building, or you can buy a new construction, which would be in a new building. But every one of these properties is going to be controlled by a condo association, and there will be rules and regulations and bylaws that you have to follow. Over the years, I've written many stories about wonderful condo projects that were developed and things like that. The brand new buildings, they may have all the new amenities and incredible views of downtown, a lake, the Chicago River. But you're still, once the building is sold out, the developer, let's hope, the developer did a quality job of building the property and, it's solid, there's not any defects. But once it's turned over to the condo association, the developer is out of the deal, and you are literally controlling your own destiny, and the people who step up, who want to be involved in the board, they run for office or they volunteer, and hopefully they do a good job, But what I see is, in the resale market, this is the area that I think I'm more concerned with than new construction. First of all, in Chicago right now, the vast majority of these high-rises going up, and there are thousands of units, they're all rental, okay? Because of the recession, the banks who provide the loans to erect the new properties have shied away from condominiums because there were, a lot of foreclosures, and we went through this crisis, in 2008, in that period. So banks are not really, they're just starting to begin to finance condos again. And there are some, we're going to have another wave of condo construction in Chicago, I would imagine. But for the past 5 years, everything that went up is a rental, really the vast majority is rental apartments, luxury rental apartments. Down the road, a lot of these luxury rentals, I could see them being converted to condominium ownership, but
so
right
we're
now,
going back. So we're going back to the condo conversions, huh?
I think, you have to look at this thing as kind of like a pendulum. It swings. There's a recession, and we had a deep recession. Some people say we had, it was more than a recession. It was, the Great Recession, they call it. I mean, I think it might have been a depression. But it pretty much wiped out, that for sale condo sector in Chicago. There was not any new buildings going up during the downturn. Now, and as we came out of it, rental buildings. That's what we've seen. But what I'm focusing on right now is you've got all these condos that were converted back in the late 70s and early 80s along Lakeshore Drive. And think about it. These buildings were built in the 60s, and we're talking properties that are the useful life of a building, according to the FHA, is 40 years. I mean, these buildings are 60 years old, 70 years old.
That's all it is 40 years?
Well, that's what the FHA would say,
Really?
And unless you have to consider really, really strong maintenance and upkeep, and, the roof wears out, the windows wear out. I mean, it's... And a lot of the buildings that were converted, some of those early buildings were, they were FHA financed buildings that were rental buildings, and they weren't really, the construction was okay, but we're not looking at, granite, solid, stone buildings, or in many cases they're glass, partition walls and things like that. So anyway, over the years, if they're not building any new condos, your market, for a buyer is limited to resale condos. And this is where I think a lot of the problems lie. Shopping for a resale condo, how do you know that you're buying in a building that has been well maintained? And, they say it's well maintained, but we have to remember that number, 72% of these buildings, these HOAs and condos across the country are, in financial trouble because the maintenance costs are huge. The assessments have gone up. And when you're buying, the realtor's not going to tell you well, no, this building's a bad building. They haven't been maintaining it as well. No, they're going to try it. If you like the building, it's got a great view, hey, you're going to buy in it. And there's a thing, you know, the reserve fund is the issue, the way I look at it. I mean, you have condo associations that have depleted their reserves. They're trying to not hit the owners with special assessments. They've raised the assessments as far as they can, and then they're in this situation where they got to borrow money to keep the building going. And in many cases, one of the things that the Chippy study found is there's not a lot of financial clarity. They're not going to brag about the fact that their reserve fund is greatly depleted. And while they say that there's no special assessment, many, many times the condo association is forced to take out a loan, you know, and it's a reserve loan to refund to build up the reserves again. A good condominium, you should spend 3% of all the assessments the month that comes in from the owners should go into the reserves. You're always trying to build up. It's like a savings account, you know. So you want to have money in the account for that disaster that may come along. You know, who knows? If the roof may fail, the boiler may fail. So you have a reserve study would tell you the useful life of these elements and when you should plan to replace them, okay? So the money's going out, and they really frown against making huge special assessments, although a lot of times they're forced to do that. I mean, there was a building in Chicago that was on Lincoln Park, beautiful view, and all the owners were hit with a $50,000 special assessment because the north facade of the building, you know, where the wind was blowing in the winter, there was tremendous problems with water coming through the brick, and they had to rebuild practically the whole north facade of the building. The windows were leaking. The lintels over the windows were rotted out. It was an older building, you know. And so every now and then, you know, what is the life of a building? You know, like I said, 40 years, things start going wrong, you know. So you've got this issue, and a lot of times buyers are not told that there's this huge loan that the association went out and got to replenish the reserve funds. All the owners really, you know coming into the building is, oh, their assessment is so many hundred dollars a month. Well, if the assessments are really high, like, I don't know, take a pick. I've heard of pick a number.
I've heard of $1,000+ monthly assessments.
Well, in Sanford Village, okay, which is a huge development that was built in the '60s, and it's in the Gold Coast in the sense of Chicago. You know, it's North Side. You know, a very nice neighborhood. Some of those units, you know, one, two-bedroom units, they're paying, you know, $1,100, $1,200 a month in a special assessment. That usually means that there's, you know,
in special assessments?
Well, I mean, I'm talking about a monthly assessment. So to avoid the special assessment, they jack the monthly assessment to a huge number. You'd think, you know, most people would think, oh, well, I'll pay an assessment of $200, $300 a month. $400 sounds high. $500 sounds, you know, $600 sounds a lot. How would you like to pay $1,200, you know, a month on top of a mortgage payment?
Yeah.
It can be a heavy load. And then what happens is the owner, perhaps has problems, loses a job, goes through a divorce, is a death in the family. He can't pay a mortgage and an $1,100, $1,200 a month assessment. So guess what? Foreclosure. Okay. And I think that may have happened in many, many buildings during the downturn we had, you know, starting 2007, 2008. So a lot of people, you know, they're underwater, then they lose it, and then they just let the bank take it back.
So, Don, is this a viable form of housing? I keep coming back to, are we on the right track, or are we just going to keep being dumb and make stupid mistakes and just end up totally ruining residential America?
Well, you know, I've always looked at homeownership in America as the American dream. I do buy into that concept. I think that people, I think ownership builds stronger communities, without a doubt. I think that the American dream, though, has kind of faded in recent years. I think if you look at the home ownership numbers now, at one time, 70% of people in the U.S. owned their own home, and now it's down to like 63% because there's been a lot of shifting over to rental apartments and things like that. The younger groups, like millennials coming out of school now, they went through a bad experience. They saw their parents lose value in their homes, during the recession, the Great Recession, and they're not real keen on tying up, buying early. They'll buy when they have to buy, maybe after 30, but that first time buyer segment of America, they're not buying, they're renting, and the millennials, that group wants to be not tied down, and they look at it as, well, I could have a job in Chicago this year, and 2 years from now I might be in San Francisco. Why would I want to buy something, So there's a lot of resistance, and you have to keep in mind the 20-somethings that just got out of college, they have these huge student loans. They couldn't qualify for a mortgage even if they wanted one, a lot of them, So unless their parents are helping them, with down payment money, they're going to rent.
But okay, you see, you're assuming that there's going to be some kind of an association. You're talking about the American dream, which I think is very different from what we have right now. The American dream is the actual home ownership, and it initially started off as the little house on the quiet street, residential street with a white picket fence around it. But that, and it's the governance with all of these extra layers of government and fines and little Nazis and Captain Bly's running around the place that have ruined it.
Well, I have to agree with you. I mean, remember at the beginning of this thing, you said I was known as Bungalow Man. I'm an advocate of owning a single family detached house in an HOA. I've never lived in an HOA. I have owned condominium units as an investor over the years, and I probably had 10 of them, but I sold them, made money on every deal during that period. But I've never, ever actually lived in a condominium or HOA, and I don't want to. I wouldn't have it. She gave me a free one, what I know now. The research with Sarah Benson on the book, Escaping Condo Jail, I thought I knew everything about condominiums and HOAs because I had written articles for 30 or 40 years about it. I'm old school, and I thought I knew it all. And believe me, what an eye-opener that project was. For 4 years, we worked on that book, and that's why I guess we're having this conversation, because Chippy came out of that, and Sarah started the Association of Valuation, which is a company that rates condominiums like a FICO score. This Association of Valuation was a very interesting idea that Sarah developed out of this book. And Sarah Benson is a very well-known realtor in Chicago, but has always been kind of a champion of little guy, and always works toward the consumer's benefit. I met her originally doing an article on buyer brokerage, and that was back in the 90s. Buyer brokerage, nobody even knew what that was, but it was exclusive representation for a buyer, where you don't have brokers again double dipping and collecting both ends of a commission. Anyway, so what Sarah did was develop this algorithm, the PAR score, to analyze the financial health of a condo or HOA. Nobody's ever done this before, and it's really a very, very interesting concept, because normally when you buy a condo or a unit in an HOA, you look at the furniture's nice, the floor plan is nice.
It's emotional.
Yeah, right.
It's an emotional purchase.
You never look at the other side. You never look at the things we talked about earlier about how's the reserve fund? How well managed is it? Is there a lot of lawsuits? So this is what the association evaluation, PAR score does, it's a new concept. I think it's going to be very successful. I think people will buy into that concept. And, it's only been going a couple of years here. But you need to be a detective buying, in the HOA or a condominium project. You really got to do more research. You just can't, buy blind without delving into the other side. I mean, you buy a single-family detached home that's not in an HOA, okay? You can buy an insurance policy on the furnace and the appliances, So for a few $100, at least you have some coverage if some major element goes out, I don't know. I mean, I suppose I don't think you can do that at the condo, because it's got a central heating system. If it is individual, furnaces and things like that and air conditioning, maybe you can, but I like the freedom of not being told what I can plant in my garden. I like the freedom of knowing that if I want to put up purple drapes, I can put purple drapes in my, not that I ever would. But,
why not, Don B? Go ahead.
You mean I can have your permission? Okay.
You've got my permission, and I think it's great to put up purple drapes.
Well, anyway.
Add a little color to the street, right?
Getting back to your question, I do believe that the American dream is still out there. I think it's changed. I think the recession maybe put housing, for sale, ownership on the back burner. It's not as more people are renting, more young people are renting. But eventually what happens is these young people, they get married, they have families, and they're going to want to own, and take advantage of. I mean, there are vast advantages of ownership, and tax write-offs, writing off your real estate taxes, your mortgage interest, things like that. I'm sure that I don't see the lobbyists in Washington getting rid of those perks for out, and they're always going to be there. But one thing is troubling. I have not seen any of these political candidates, who are planning to run for president, really have a strong house. It's kind of like, nobody's really, saying much about housing, and I think we have to, look at that in the future and see how housing is changing in America. And a lot of people are really not focusing on that, So.
Tell me something, Don. How has your writing changed? You say that writing Escaping Condo Jail opened your eyes and got you to see a whole different side of what you were doing. Has your writing changed at all? I mean, your thinking has.
Well,
your understanding has.
Yes. Well, writing thousands of stories, real estate stories over the years, I've always written with a consumer-oriented spin. I've done a lot of stories about buyer beware of this, I have written stories when you mentioned shoddy construction. I did do many stories on new construction that was not done well. So I've written about, those negative, the stories that are, that point out the negativity of some of the issues of housing. But, this whole issue of, the governing of the actual governing, the running of the internal workings of the associations, the condo association and the HOA, never really did a lot of stuff on that. Occasionally, usually the owners complaining about that the builder built a bad building, and we've done stories about that, and being careful about going into buying new, and then but this whole issue of the politics of running you know, it's, you said it. You said it's like a miniature governmental unit here. You know, it's like having a village board inside your building telling you these are the rules, and we're going to fine you if you don't, you know, obey the rules. So you're opening. You know, if that's what you want. I mean, if you could live under those conditions, you know, and you feel safer, the you know, people are going to run your life for you, then fine. I mean, if that's what you want. A lot of people apparently have accepted that concept. I personally, maybe it's the pioneer instinct in my soul, I don't really want anyone to tell me how to, you know, live in my house. You know, I want to make those decisions by myself. I don't need a condo board to tell me, you know, I feel I'm experienced enough, and I have lived long enough to make the right decisions about my property, you know. And I know when the roof leaks, and I can fix it, and I know when the heating system needs the filters changed, and I don't have to have somebody doing all that for me. If I, as you get older, you want a little more help in doing some of those chores, you know. Yeah, you got to cut the lawn, but you know, I enjoy cutting my grass, you know. I mean, it's fresh air, you know. It doesn't take that long, and I do my own lawn. So maybe someday in the future I'll have a landscape service. I don't know. But anyway, these are choices, personal choices. And people today are so busy, they don't want to spend any time at all. All they want to do is have everything done for them, you know. And so they're going to have to pay for that. And in many cases, it's not about just money. It's about giving up personal freedom, you know. And don't squawk. You signed the deal. You went into this community, and you will obey their rules. You know, it's like, you know, being a child in a sense. Your mother says you got to be in it. It's summertime. You have to be in by 9 o'clock.
Oh. We will lock the doors if you're not there.
Or you will be spanked with a, you know, a nice fine.
it's terrible. Do you ever get stories from homeowners who are having problems? Say somebody who writes in and says, Don, would you do a story on what's going on in my HOA? They're fining me because I have a cracked flower pot on my front lawn.
I have had letters like that. I had a woman, a couple who they were living in a condo on Lakeshore Drive. They decided that the windows were so bad that they complained about it, and nothing was ever done. Apparently, water was coming in, wind was blowing through them. So they decided to replace their own windows, you know. And they bought these beautiful Pella windows, the energy window with the double pane, and spent about, you know, $30,000-$40,000, you know, on windows. Mm-hmm. And then a year or two later, the building decided to replace the windows in the building, and they said, your windows don't match ours, and they made them take the windows out that they'd spent $30,000 for, and they wound up putting in these cheaper windows, you know, and these people were just livid, you know. But obviously what happened was they went beyond, they probably broke some rules, or maybe they knew somebody on the condo board. I don't know how they got the windows into the building, but they literally had to take out the good windows and put in mediocre windows because the entire building got new windows. You know? And I found that to be shocking. Actually, you know, when you think about it, it's almost humorous that this would happen. You know, you feel sorry for the people because they lost money, and they were just beside themselves. You know, so you know, I remember writing a column about that.
Oh, you did write a column?
Yes, it was a few years ago. Yeah, I think it's in the book too. You know, I think we didn't mention that because there's all kinds of amazing abuse going on out there that you think, how did this ever happen? Well, strange but true. You know.
Well, this is okay. This story about the windows is a little unique. I mean, it's not the usual run of the mill stories that you hear. The flag flaps, or the kid has a little playhouse in the back, and you know, the association doesn't like it, or it's the wrong color, or all of that. But what does it take? I mean, this is obviously a little different, but what does it take to get your story in the paper? What do homeowners have to do to get someone like a Don DeBatt to say, you know what, this story has merit, I will do it?
Well, usually when, you know, you're going to get emails and letters from people complaining about things, usually it's got to, from the journalistic point of view, it's got to be more than one homeowner complaining about one instance. It has to be litigation or in a sense like the Chippy survey, by where you gather up abuses from hundreds of owners across the country. And when the survey was done, it had weight. It had legitimacy, because I think if we would have kept soliciting more input, it easily could have been not hundreds of homeowners or HOA owners or condo owners, could have been thousands. Because I think the problems out there are vast, and nobody seems to nobody's addressing the consumer protection in this area that's needed, and I think one of the things that we tried to delve in our book, Escaping Condo Jail, was just, hey, what about having some federal consumer protection or state consumer protection? One of the things that was really, really shocking was the Interstate Land Act. There used to be condominiums were covered by the Interstate Land Act, and during the Obama administration, the lobbyists gutted that act and removed condominiums. And the Interstate Land Act really, it provides federal protection. I think it really originated with people selling land that was underwater in Florida or something like that. But it went all the way back to the 1960s. And this act, I think, was at least some form of protection. And it's gone. Condos are not in there at all. And
what does the act do, Don? Do you know?
Well, not much for the condo owner anymore.
But what did it do?
When a developer wanted to, build a condo project, they had to file all these, this documentation with the federal government, and that's gone now. They had to really explain what they were going to build and how it was going to be constructed, and it's just gone. That was I think a big loss. One of the things that we talked about in the book was seeking some kind of federal condo risk disclosure and oversight, full disclosure of the risk of loss of your investment. A lot of people, I'm going to buy a condo and it's going to go up in value, and, in 10 years I'm going to make money. Well, that's not guaranteed, there really isn't any protection to say, hey, warning people that it's like buying stock, it's on Wall Street. Nobody ever guarantees you're going to buy Starbucks at $10 a share and it's going to go to 70, so just telling people, that there's could be problems is an important thing.
Is just telling people the full disclosure, is that going to take care of it?
Well, if you don't require it either on the state or federal level, nothing will ever be, no protection will ever exist if it's not required.
I know we're not fixing what the real problem is. We're telling people, and I can see eventually where people will start waking up and say, no, I'm not going to do this, which means the existing ones are going to be absolutely worthless. And however many you have, the people who own them now are going to be left holding the bag, and they're going to lose everything. So it's not really fixing the problem in the sense that...
Beware.
It is. It's buyer beware, and this is what you're getting into.
And another thing that we think that should be stressed is some kind of mandatory board service by all owners. Don't let a click get in there and run the condo away for 20 years. It should be a rotating basis. Let every owner in the building should have the goal of serving. You're not getting paid for this. This is time consuming. Now you have to wonder who are these people that constantly volunteer and want to run the board, and then they get in there and then you can't get them out. You know, they must have some psychological deep need for controlling.
They're psychological, all right.
I don't know what it is.
Don, we're out of time. Thank you so very much.
Good.
For coming on. I'm so glad you came and shared your experiences and your thoughts with us.
I appreciate the opportunity, Shu. Thank you very much. And anytime you need to comment, give me a call.
Thank you, Don. I look forward to doing that again. And thanks to all of you for listening.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.